Before she could reply, he was reinforcing his line of argument. They were going to inter the poor sod, didn't you say? For a few moments, the word inter failed to register adequately in her brain, sounding like one of those strangely unfamiliar words that had to be sought out in a dictionary. But then she remembered it meant they wouldn't be cremating the body. They would be digging a deep, vertically sided hole in the orange-coloured earth and lowering the body down on straps. She'd seen the sort of thing on TV and at the cinema, and usually it had been raining then too. She looked out of the window, frowning and disappointed. "You'll get your feet drenched. That's all I'm trying to say." He turned to the centre pages of his newspaper and began reading about the extraordinary sexual prowess of a world-famous snooker player. For a couple of minutes or so at that point, the course of events in the Bowman household could perhaps have continued to drift along in its normal, unremarkable, neutral gear. But it was not to be. The last thing Margaret wanted to do was ruin the lovely shoes she'd bought. All right, she'd bought them for the funeral, but it was ridiculous to go and waste more than £50. It wasn't necessary to go and trample all over the muddy churchyard, of course. But even going out in them in this weather was pretty foolish. She looked down again at her expensively sheathed feet and then at the clock on the mantelpiece. Not much time. But she would change them, she decided. Most things went reasonably well with black, and that pair of grey shoes with the cushioned soles would be a sensible choice. But if she was going to be all in black apart from just her shoes, wouldn't it be nicely fashionable to change her handbag as well? Yes, there was that grey leather handbag that would match the shoes almost perfectly. She tripped up the stairs hurriedly and fatefully. It was no more than a minute or so after this decision, not a decision that would strike anyone as being particularly momentous, that Thomas Bowman put down his newspaper and answered the confidently repeated stridencies at the front door, where in friendly fashion he nodded to a drably clad young woman standing at the porch in the pouring rain, under a garishly multicoloured golf umbrella, and wearing knee-length boots of bright yellow plastic that took his thoughts back to the Technicolor broadcast of the first manned landing on the moon. Some of the women on the estate, quite clearly, were considerably less fashion-conscious than his wife. "She's nearly ready," he said, "just putting on her ballet shoes for your conducted tour across the ploughed fields." "Sorry I'm a bit late." "You coming in?" "Better not, we're a bit pushed for time. Hello, Margaret." The chicly clad feet which moments ago had flitted lightly up the stairs were now descending more somberly in a pair of grey, thickish-soled walking shoes. A grey-gloved hand hurriedly pushed a white handkerchief into the grey handbag, and Margaret Bowman was ready at last for a funeral. Chapter 2. November. "Nobody ever notices postmen, somehow," said he thoughtfully. "Yet they have passions like other men." G.K. Chesterton, The Invisible Man. It was a little while after the front door had closed behind the two women that he allowed himself an oblique glance across the soggy lawn that stretched between the wide lounge window and the road. He had told Margaret that she could have the car if she wanted it, since he had no plans for going anywhere himself. But clearly they had gone off in the other woman's, since the maroon metro still stood there on the steepish slope that led down to the garage. Charlbury Drive might just as well have been uninhabited, and the rain poured steadily down. He walked upstairs and went into the spare bedroom, where he opened the right-hand leaf of the cumbrous, dark mahogany wardrobe that served to store the overflow of his wife's and his own clothing. Behind this leaf, stacked up against the right-hand side of the wardrobe, stood eight white shoeboxes, one atop the other, and from this stack he carefully withdrew the third box from the bottom. Inside lay a bottle of malt whiskey, about two-thirds empty, or about one-third full, as a man who is thirsting for a drink would probably have described it. The box was an old one, and had been the secret little hiding place for two things since his marriage to Margaret. For a week, in the days when he was still playing football, it had hidden a set of crudely pornographic photographs which had circulated from the veteran goalkeeper to the 14-year-old outside left.